and welcome to another NL Full Time. We've got a different guest today that hasn't been with us for some time, and we've got three different areas to focus on as well. Let me start by introducing our guests this morning. We've got the ever regular, ever reliable, even if he has to disappear on us here and there, and he probably will do in a minute, but Richard Wharton Dickey, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Multitasking, as usual, but great to join you.
Absolutely, and delighted to have on. I get to know many footballers in the job that I do. Not many closer than this one. In fairness, we haven't seen each other or caught up for a little while, but it's great to see you again this morning, Lewis Kinsella, now at Maidenhead. Good morning, Kins.
Morning, Rob. Thank you for having me on. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, great stuff. Great to see you. We'll get on to how things are with you in just a second. What I want to introduce first up is it's England C time again. It's coming around very quickly in just 10 days' time. It's always a key date in the calendar of National League players, even if sometimes the fixture comes round at a difficult time, right in the middle of the business end of the season. Just one of many subjects I touched on with England C assistant manager Mick Payne. Mick, good to speak to you as always. We've got another one of those England C games coming up, and we have to wait so long, don't we? I wish we could get back to where we had two or three a season, but we are where we are. Are you looking forward to this one?
Yeah, great to be on, Rob. Yeah, dead right. When you say looking forward to it, Rob, I'm really, really excited. That's the thing that's coming out. You know, I think it's a really exciting group. The group we put together, Paul's put together, myself as well, in terms of going to games, and also Paul's still got his scouting sort of system as well, where players have been flagged up. No, it's a really exciting group, and you're dead right. You know, I know we need more games, but this is a special game.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to fill our listeners in on the details, the game itself will be on Tuesday, the 19th of March, 7:45 kickoff at Llanelli Town's ground. So it's Wales' home match. Last year, of course, a similar sort of time. So a little bit of detail. You've got a 16-man squad. You've also named a 10-man provisional squad. And each of the 24 National League teams have been represented. Plus, I think you've got a player in from the National League North and the National League South as well. Just tell us a little bit about what you and Paul, and obviously, you know, in discussions with your colleagues at Wales, what you decided to go for in terms of the criteria this year with your selection.
Yeah, that's a good point and fair point, Rob. You know, in terms of where we are, you know, look, the England C setup used to be open age. You know, when we first got involved, myself and Paul were involved, you know, over 20-odd years ago, which is crazy. And then it sort of, if you like, went to an under-23 sort of team, which was when we was getting those amount of games, which was great. That was why we see it as that, you know, development sort of team. But now this, we go back to it, you know, this one against Wales is an open-age team. Although I do believe the average age of the team is about 25, 26. So it's not, you know, huge, although we've got one or two older guys in there. But so it is an open-age group. And you're right, you know, most sides have been represented, whether it's in the 16-man squad or the contingency squad from each club. Now, the reason behind that is, you know, we want to be honest and fair to all the, you know, this stage of the season, Rob, is a, you know, vital stage of the season for all these clubs in the National League. And it would be slightly, I wouldn't say unfair, but it would be unreasonable to say, look, we want five of your players from one side. You know, that it just wouldn't happen. I do believe that. And that's, you know, but also going back on that, Rob, I think it's important that we do, you know, clubs are represented. You know, it's a non-league side, and we do see these players playing for their clubs week in, week out. You know, we get good coverage on the TV about them. So, you know, it's a real, I think, just a real sort of, you just applaud these clubs who are representing, their players who are representing England. It's just good that we've got a good covering of nearly every side in the National League. I think it's just great. I really do.
Yeah, fantastic. Just looking at the squad a little bit more closely, I see at least two names that have played for England C before. One of those might be some years ago, and he's one of your two goalkeepers, Grant Smith of Bromley. Pretty sure he's been with you before, hasn't he?
Yeah, Grant. I had a chat with him the other day, and you know, just congratulated on his call up again. Yeah, he came away with us. He played against Slovakia when we played in Slovakia. So he's. I think this may be his third, maybe his fourth cap, but definitely maybe his third cap. So Grant's come again, and look, I think everyone in the National League will say he's, you know, right up there with the best in the league. There's no doubt about that, you know, in terms of his credentials and the way he's performed for Bromley. I had a good chat with Andy Woodman about him this year as well, and I've seen Grant a couple of times, and look, he's a very, very good goalkeeper, so we're delighted to have him, you know, in the mix, no doubt about that.
Yeah, I forget the exact number, but double figures in clean sheets again this season with Bromley, who are obviously flying high in the playoffs. Your other goalkeeper is a really interesting selection because I think his family's got a little bit of international pedigree, hasn't it? Will Stanway of Chester.
Yeah, you're dead right. Yeah, his sister is, you know, played for the Lionesses. So, yeah, I bet the family are absolutely delighted that he's got a chance. And you're right. I mean, we're pleased again, you know, someone from the National League North, Rob, you know. So, again, we spread our net, you know, we do spread our net far and wide, and we get people who give us a little bit of recommendations, and then we have to follow these things up. I had a chat with the manager at Chester. He was, you know, waxing lyrical about Will Stanway, and yeah, he's come through, and again, someone who's had good, a good season in terms of clean sheet ratio. But he's a lad who hasn't been playing in goal very long, Rob. It's quite incredible story. Again, I had a good chat on the phone with him, and he said, look, you know, yeah, I was sort of flirting with goalkeeping from about 18, 19. He said, but now that's where I am, you know. So he's come on a long way in a short time. There's no, you know, crazy really, but just shows you that if you're dedicated to a position, you can really find your feet, and he's definitely found his feet.
He certainly has. He's a Cumbrian lad, and I'm already under orders from my friend and yours, Adam Johnson, to pull Will when we're up there and have a word with him for BBC Cumbria. They're very proud of their own, of course. And looking at the defenders, Gus Scott-Morris, of course, who was with you last year. And I'm personally delighted to see Ollie Harfield selected. Played every minute of every game for Aldershot Town this year. A model professional. Adaptable as well, has adapted to a new position this year, left-sided centre-back. He's also played at left wing-back. And then in your central defenders, I see a bit of experience and nous there, Mick. Tom Eastman of Dagenham and Jamie Grimes.
Yeah, well, you just mentioned the four there. You know, we know about Gus Scott-Morris. As I said, he got called up before, and he was absolutely... Well, yeah, what he did, Rob, for me, that young fella from Southend, he just epitomised playing for England C. He loved it. I mean, I've got an incredible picture with him, and he's perhaps one of the proudest moments of my career. You know, he was someone, after we won the game against Wales last time, he was just so pleased to represent the side. So yeah, he's done exceptionally well at Southend. You mentioned about Ollie Harfield, someone I know who came to Dagenham Redbridge for a while and had a little run out there, and I like the word you use. You know, he does. He's one of those players who can adapt. There's no, that's what he brings. He brings something where you can slip him in somewhere and he will do a job for the side. So, yeah, we're delighted to have him on board. And you're right, he's had a terrific season at Aldershot. So, yeah, he deserves to be in the 16. But you mentioned about the two, you know, I've just got some information on Tom Eastman. Again, someone I see regular and incredible. Rob, I mean, people will see he's close to, I think it was nearly 400 games he played for Colchester, you know, in the league, you know, at Division One. I mean, that's no mean feat whatsoever. So he's had a real, you know, great sort of career, and we'd like to have him involved in, right? He does bring some experience, some steel, some nous, whatever you want to call it, but also some quality. And the lad Grimes is at Chesterfield. I believe he's played literally every game this season for Chesterfield, and leading by example. You know, he's captain of that outfit, and I know Paul Cook is, well, he does, he goes out on the park, and Paul Cook just is delighted that he's leading his troops, because he is a real colossus the way he plays. So two very, very strong players indeed, with lots and lots of experience there.
Yeah, also Miles Kenlock, who's at Ebbsfleet now, really settled well there this year. In the midfield, you've got the Alti skipper, Isaac Marriott. Ed Francis, of course, he's had a cracking season up at Gateshead after joining after initial period on loan. Dan Pybus at Dorking and Callum Maycock at Solihull Moors, plus the precocious young talent that is Rhys Smith at Maidenhead United.
Yeah, look, you know, you've gone right through that group. And, you know, I'll just come back to Kenlock. You know, again, he's a player who had, he's at Ebbsfleet, but again, had a real rise, played in the Championship, Rob. Played in the Championship, you know, a number of times for Ipswich. Perhaps has come down the pecking order down the line in terms of where he's playing now at Ebbsfleet. But he's, again, someone who's got lots and lots of experience, only about 27 years of age, and still can bring a lot to the party. There's no doubt about that. And hopefully this will give him another spur to move on. And you just mentioned all the other guys. And I've seen a number of those in person this year, you know, in that midfield outfit. We all know the midfield setup is, you know, you've got to be in the engine room, you've got to be able to play as well, but you've got to have people that, you know, get in positions to attack, you know, when we've got the ball, but also, especially those midfield players, have got to be box to box to get themselves back in as well and be that sort of extra defending unit. So all those lads you've mentioned, you know, exciting to have those in that sort of midfield area, and I'm sure they're all going to feature to hopefully get us the result, you know.
And you're not going to be short of goals in that lineup either, are you? Callum Stead, pretty sure he's well into double figures now for the season. Keeps scoring in braces for Barnet. In Manny Di Sarue, Hartlepool now having probably the most prolific season that he's had. Ollie Pearce, who probably, outside of your other striker, has got the most goals in non-league football this season. And then the man himself, Paul McCallum, who's now into the low 30s, and we're still only in early March.
Yeah, again, you know, we've spread our net, if you like. You know, we've spread it really far and wide. We just go with a boy, Pearce, who's at, you know, playing at, in terms of Worthing there. And he's, look, he's someone, again, he's National League South, but he's been knocking the goals for fun. And again, we've had our scouts looking at him and making sure, you know, he's the article. And look, whatever level you're playing at, if you're scoring goals, you know, in abundance like he is, we're delighted to have him, you know, in the squad. And you've already mentioned the other lads who are around, in and around it. McCallum, I mean, again, is someone I know, someone I've seen at close quarters. He's had a resurgence again. You know, he's had a resurgence again in terms of his goal ratio at, you know, in terms of where he is at Eastleigh. And as I said, he's leading the line in terms of the goals scored in the National League. So, look, there is goals in abundance. There's no doubt about that. You know, the boy Stead's done exceptionally well at Barnet. Rob, you know, I'm so, so excited to see this group coming together. I think everyone within their positions has got so much to offer, so much to give, and if we can just gel together, because that's the only, not downside, that's the wrong word to use, really, but the only sad part about it, we're not together that long. You know that. You've been in our camps, and, you know, you know what Paul does, Paul Fairclough. He's just a master, an absolute master of getting the group together very, very quickly and getting to gel as a team.
Absolutely that. I've witnessed it at first hand, listeners. A bunch of lads, a lot of which have probably played against each other once or twice a season. One or two who know each other from former clubs. But within 24 hours or so, they're transformed into a unit that's together. And they have a special bond from there on in, on the pitch and off it afterwards. I'm delighted to say that once again, Mick and Paul have been very accommodating to NL full time, and we shall be joining you guys down in Llanelli. Hopefully come and catch a little bit of the training and chat with you guys before the game, and then obviously enjoy the game itself. There may or may not be TV coverage. Get there if you can. What I wanted to make a point here, Mick, maybe we could just have a little appeal between us, if anybody's listening, that matters. S4C do normally cover the game for Wales, don't they? But we've got a terrific a terrific TV company in TNT Sports, showing the National League week in, week out. And wouldn't it be fantastic if they'd come in and take the game? You know, maybe live, but if not live, at least some highlights of it.
Rob, you know, it would be wonderful. I think, as I said, I'm so pleased that TNT Sports really do cover the National League. They cover it really, really well. We've got some ex-players on there like Aaron McLean, who actually played for the England C, so he knows what it brings and what the value of it. And it would be nice, wouldn't it? It'd be really, really good that they have their coverage of the games, you know, regular on, you know, every time, every week. And then it's their England team, the National League's England team.
Absolutely. Because,
they're the ones who are playing week in, week out. No, it'd be great, as you say, whether they could cover it, Rob, or, as you say, even if we put some highlights on the game, it'd be great. It really would.
There you go. Just in case any of you guys all have been regularly on this podcast, Adam Virgo, Aaron McLean, Adam Summerton, go and rattle a cage for us.
Well, that was Mick Payne, and we look forward to catching up with Mick and Paul and the whole England C event up at Wales in 10 days' time, and we'll produce a pod special from that camp and that game as well. So we look forward to that. Right, we've got to get on with National League action and FA Trophy quarterfinals. So let's start in the National League. Kins, a slightly affected fixture list. I just think 7 games rather than 12, largely due to the FA Trophy. And that represented, didn't it, a key opportunity for teams involved in the promotion and the relegation battles to really take advantage. And certainly your side was one of those that did that on the day. Maidenhead United took on Dorking, a huge game in terms of where the teams were in the table. From afar, I was thinking for both sides that was a must-not-lose game. But unfortunately for Dorking, they did lose it. Maidenhead got the job done. And with some aplomb as well, by the sound of it, some cracking goals.
Yeah, no, the boys were brilliant, to be fair. It's probably one of the best performances I've seen this season from us. We knew how important the game was, being a six-pointer. You look at the teams around us. We had Kiddy York, who played against each other. We were brilliant. The Reece Smith was outstanding again. Ashley Nathaniel George and Jaden Mitchell was excellent. Also, Tristan, who's just come in, he done really well. But all four goals were excellent, and we thoroughly deserved the victory.
And one of the things we always remark on from afar, Kins, is Maidenhead's may be dogged by inconsistency, but what they're consistent at is pulling off sometimes back-to-back wins or 3 wins in a week and pulling themselves clear of trouble. And then inevitably the other side of that, you know, there has been a little bit of a slide after that. It's obviously difficult for Maidenhead. They are not perhaps, I mean, you tell me, are Maidenhead as part-time as Dorking and Wealdstone, or is there a difference?
We had 2 mornings and a night, so we're like a hybrid sort of system. Whereas Wealdstone are 2 nights. I'm not sure what Dorking are, but we're 2 mornings and a night. But I think people find it tough coming to York Road. The pitch and is obviously a bit of a slant, and it's not a massive stadium like what you get in the Oldhams and stuff like that. So people, I think clubs that come to Maidenhead find it really tough, which we play on. And I think our home record's been very good this season.
Absolutely, and I'm just gonna throw it out there as a commentator. It's one of my least favourite places to go to as well, and it just shows the variety of the National League, isn't it? You know, last year you could have been at the racecourse ground. This year you could be at some very good grounds, massive grounds, and then there are others. And I think it's something that Maidenhead have to build into their armour, isn't it? You need the sort of players that will go to war, or that are warriors and that are highly motivated. And I can see why they signed you, Kins. But you're slight knock, I think, at the moment. But how have things been for you? Because let's be upfront about it. It didn't really work out at Wealdstone for you, and it's been difficult at times at Maidenhead as well.
Yeah, no. Well, I got to a point when I was at Aldershot where I took a decision to leave full-time football to sort of focus on my career after football, in terms of working at Arsenal and doing the scouting and the recruitment. And glad to say that's doing really well now. I'm basically full-time as a scout at Arsenal. So that's doing really well. I went into to Wealdstone with probably the mindset that I was going to play every week, because I've come from Aldershot, a full-time club. I've gone to Wealdstone and thought, oh, I'm definitely going to play every week. And then found it quite difficult. We had a good squad there. We were playing good football. The manager rotated a lot, which I struggled with. For me, where I've gone from Aldershot, starting, I think, 110 games out of 115 that I was involved in, I just was a starter for Aldershot. For then to then go as a bit of a sub and then come on and be a sub and then come on, I just found it tough and difficult. And then I got a concussion, which I was out for 8 weeks with, which is the most random injury ever. But I had no problems with my knees and stuff like that. And then gone to Maidenhead, where I was almost struggling to get a club in the summer again. And I rung Devonshire because I knew he was interested in me when I left Aldershot. And they took me in, but I almost felt like I'd be going in a second choice to Sammy Beckwith and provide him with support and a bit of competition, and sort of help guide him, because he's only young and he's been good all season, and he'd probably be one that maybe a few teams will be looking at because he's a great shape, great size, added a goal yesterday. So I'm still looking to carry on playing part-time and maybe open to a bit more full-time if something comes up, but sort of see my role a little bit different now to what I was when I was younger. Someone that can support and someone that can play when required. And don't get me wrong, if I had to play 40 games a season, I would, but also to be a bit more of a role model and a leader in the changing room.
I think you always thrived on that, you know, as one of the professionals at Aldershot, which hasn't always been the most professional of clubs. I know how high your standards were. You absolutely relished the Saturday, Tuesday. Your fitness levels were superb. And I guess your time at Aldershot, as I remember, was very much about those long runs. You know, there were two really long runs of almost 40, 50 games on the trot and a couple of really difficult periods where you were out, you know, with injuries, which, you know, are never well-timed and are never fortunate. But your attitude in those times were good. It'd be interesting. I'd love to see a full-time club come out and say, look, you know, there is a player who will give you 40 games a season and he'll be right at it. And also those leadership qualities, because I know that you really, really thrived on being the captain at Aldershot, and the fans loved you anyway, but I think they loved you as their skipper too.
Yeah, no, I loved it there. And probably I do regret leaving. But for my career outside of football, it's something that I had to take. But Ollie obviously done really well. He's come in and he's flying, and Ryan Glover's playing there, and they're flying. And yeah, I see it with a bit of jealousy now that they're in the playoffs. They've had the FA Cup run, and obviously I left and stuff like that. But I'm so buzzing for the club, and it's a place that has a real special place in my heart, especially where they helped me out with my operation, because without them fans, I probably wouldn't be playing football right now.
Just give us a tiny little taster of what it's like being in and around Arsenal Football Club right now. I believe this morning they sit top of the Premier League again.
Yeah, no, it's an incredible club to work for. Another club which I come through as a kid, and it's got it's very close to my heart. You don't stop learning. You learn every day. It's something that I've found. And you're dealing with agents. You're dealing with scouts. And, it's an incredible process where you can watch players from the Man United, Man City, Liverpool's down to step four, step five, step six. So there is definitely a pathway for players across all levels. And we try to make sure that no player's missed. Like your Stokes, like your Crowhouses and stuff like that. Majority of the time, they would have had eyes on them.
Good stuff. And before we move on and look at the other games, just getting back to that England C-link and Reece Smith. He appears again from the outside looking in to be quite a precocious young talent. Doesn't seem to score tap-ins, mate.
No, he's excellent. I remember when I first went in there. To be honest, I didn't really know much about Maidenhead when I first went in there. And it actually really surprised me. The club is, in general, I will get onto Reece, but you go in, we train at Bisham Abbey, which is unbelievable facilities for the level. You get your food paid for, lunch, which is, at most clubs, you have to pay for. The club pay for it, which is really good from the club. And you get all your kit as well paid for, where I've been at clubs before where you have to pay for like your coats and stuff like that. So the club are very good at looking after you. But yeah, we're going back to Reece. The first day I saw him, everyone's like, Reece. So I just watched him. But he is so good when he gets dribbling with the ball. No one can stop him. He's quick. He's strong. And he's just agile. And like you said, most of his goals have come from outside of the box. And he's found form. I think he scored three in the last four, in the last couple. The England C call-up's well-deserved. And I think he'll be one that a lot of clubs will be looking at in the summer.
Absolutely. Let's not leave out Jaden Mitchell-Lawson, who pretty much saw what Reece did and then said, if you can do that, I can do it too, yesterday. Tristan Abrahams sealed the deal in the 89th minute. And in between, of course, Charlie Carter and Jason Pryor scored for Dorking. But understandably, Mark White wasn't happy with his team. And the ups and downs, the roller coaster that is the National League, Kins. 1 minute, they're turning over the 20-point runaway leaders, Chesterfield 4-1. And here we are a week later, after back-to-back defeats at Altrincham and Maidenhead. And, I mean, we'll come on to one or two of the other games in just a moment with you and with Dickie. But what in the years you've been involved in the National League, and I've been watching and calling it, I can't remember a relegation scrap like this with so many teams involved.
No, I think it's, you look around and there's probably nine teams that could go down. I think obviously with Notts County and Wrexham moving out of the league and even Scunthorpe going down, it's, the league's a lot more even other than Chesterfield. I think Oldham,
agreed.
I think Oldham, since they got Mickey Mellon in, have taken off, just shows his qualities. Southend, without the points deduction, they're probably just outside the playoffs. So I think next season it's going to get tough again, the league. But if you look at the teams that are in and around the playoffs, like your Altrinhams, your Gateshead's, even Aldershot, I know Aldershot's a big club, but in terms of the last few years, it's a lot more competitive. It's just the toughest league I've ever played in.
Yes, it is, and the most varied league as well. Dickie, want to bring you in that battle at the bottom, which we're focusing, I guess, more heavily today with a lot of the playoff chasing sides involved in the FA Trophy quarterfinals. Kidderminster and York, huge game, billed as a huge game, both inside the bottom four, and it ends up as a 0-0 stalemate. I've got to be honest, that's not a scoreline I thought we'd see in that one this morning, but it just goes to show, I guess, that the most important thing was not to lose that game, but they'd be desperate for 3 points, weren't they, both clubs?
Yeah, I wonder whether a little bit of that might have been, it was a big game anyway, based just purely on the league positions, but I don't think either team went into it off the back of a particularly good result in midweek. I know that York in particular, their 3-1 home defeat by Wealdstone on Tuesday stung a great deal. So there would have been, a feeling of, if you can't win the game, just make sure you don't lose it. And unfortunately, it looks as though that's transmitted itself across both the teams. And it's come out with a 0-0, which really doesn't help either particularly. You know, it was a proper 6-pointer. I did think that perhaps there would be be more goals than that. You know, Kidderminster a little bit struck by injury again. I think they've lost Shane Byrne again to injury from what I heard yesterday. So we know that their form Obviously, Phil Brown coming in has had a big impact, but that Shane Byrne's return to the side had coincided with that, and he's out again. So Phil Brown shuffling the pack back and forth. I think York are trying to do the same thing. I suppose it is a first point on the board for Adam Hinchelwood as York manager. Wouldn't have been a comfortable night for him on Tuesday, a home defeat. It's really harsh on Adam Hinchelwood, I guess, to be passing judgment on what he's been able to do with York in such a short space of time. But I think there were a few York fans who would have expected, I don't know, a little bit more in terms of organisation in kind. You know, that you're looking for a new manager bounce, aren't you? And it hasn't really happened so far, but it is a first point on the board for them. Yeah, they just have to move on to the next game now, the pair of them.
Different expectations at those two clubs and flipping this back to you, Kins. I mean, Kidderminster, everybody from the outside feels, yeah, Phil Brown's come in, massive manager bounce, 4 wins on the trot, and then some other points picked up. But the brutal reality is they're second bottom on 40 points right now. You know, they're 3 points adrift of safety still, despite that run, largely due to the form of the other clubs down the bottom. But what I really want to focus on with you, Kins, and I've in doing so, I've just checked the remaining fixtures, and I'm glad to say Maidenhead haven't got to play York again. So I'm going to ask you for your honest opinion here. There's no doubt that York City have invested heavily in their squad this season. In one player alone, we know they've played over six figures. This has been seen before in football, and like it or not, it's happening again, isn't it? They've got a well-assembled squad there, and it's just not performing. How do you see it?
I think sometimes the manager is so important who you pick and give it a time. Neil Ardley's obviously gone in, who's a very experienced manager. Someone who's got respect at this level, someone who's competed at this level, he needs an opportunity. But I also look at Aldershot and I look at the gaffer there and the way he is as a person and the way he is as a manager. He almost demands high levels from the players, and he looks from the outside that he won't let anyone's standards slip. So where you see at York, you've got players on big, big money, like from what I'm hearing as well, big, big money. I think they can get a bit complacent, and if you had a manager like a Tommy Widgerton or someone like an Alan Devonshire who demands respect, I think they wouldn't be in this position.
Absolutely, no, I completely agree. It's difficult, isn't it? You know, when we're not here to just bring down and criticise other clubs, but they brought themselves down for me, York City. Yeah. And Matt Ugler, if you want to come on here and tell us different, you're more than welcome. But it's a massive, massive underachievement at York City this season. And you're not alone, Kins, in thinking that maybe, just maybe, they've parted ways with Neil Ardley a little bit too soon. Yeah. We do find ourselves bobbing up and down the table. Let's just look in, close in on the bottom end. For Oxford City, they showed a bit of character and a bit of spirit to come from 1-0 down to go 2-1 up yesterday at Rochdale. But ultimately, a goal from Sam Mather, 13 minutes from time, got a point for Rochdale, which kind of makes Rochdale one of the very few teams, really, that we can fairly comfortably say are probably not going to make the playoffs now, and it's unlikely they'll be dragged into the relegation zone, although they are only 6 points clear of it. But for Oxford City, they've come at this level, Kins. They've tried to play the way that they like to play, a bit like Burnley have done going up to the Premier League, but ultimately they've come up short. I guess as a club, they'll probably learn a lot from this experience and know what to expect if they can get up here again.
Yeah, no, he's obviously a young manager, Ross Jenkins, and they did play good football. But I think it's so hard to be able to play really good football with the players that are probably National League South standard, with some additions that, from the National League, but it will be a massive learning curve, and they'll probably learn a lot from it.
Yeah, and Dickie, what is the state of play down there? They're quite adrift now, aren't they?
Yeah, it's a 14-point gap to safety at the bottom now for Oxford City. And they've just got 8 games left to play, so only 24 points to compete for. You know, when you're at that kind of stage, you're not only, you know, you're asking for a huge upturn in your own form, but you're also asking or looking for other teams' form to collapse quite dramatically. And not just one team, you know, they are bottom. There's 3 other teams above them. They need the same thing to happen. So, you know, we don't want to write anybody off willingly or easily, but it is looking the toughest of asks now for Oxford City, unfortunately.
Yeah, I came away from the Raw Charging Stadium last weekend very much with that feeling too, Dickie, and nothing's really changed in a week to amend those thoughts. We wish Oxford City all the best. Boreham Wood are another team that it feels from afar have picked up of late, but a couple of defeats and they're right back down there again, just outside the bottom four. And they went down 2-1 at Halifax Town. FC Halifax Town, probably the club that goes the most under the radar, doing extremely well, FC Halifax Town. I know their fans are demanding Kins, but if you did a league table based on budgets, they'd be a lot nearer the bottom. And the fact that they are still on the fringes of the playoff races with 9-10 games to go is to Middleton's credit, isn't it? Millington, sorry.
Yeah, obviously, Halifax is a very difficult place to go. They've made it tough and difficult up there with the pitch and stuff like that. It's not the best of services, but you know what you get when you play against them, a hard-working team that will give 100% and never die attitude. And that's what it seems to be when every time we play Halifax, and they've got some good players as well.
Absolutely, and they won't be feeling too comfortable, but I personally think Boreham would be all right. Everybody thinks of them overachieving up and in and around the playoffs, as Garrard's had them so many times, but he has had at least one difficult season like this where Boreham would have to take care of business at the other end. And I firmly believe they've got the players, they've got the characters, and of course they've got the goal-scoring ability of Kabongo Shimanga over these last games to hopefully pull them to safety. One team that have pulled off 3 wins in just over a week, 10 points out of 12, and the last 3 all with late goals, a terrific sign that they may well do enough to stay up, and that's Woking. Kins, we've had our issues with Woking over the years, haven't we? But, you know, from an Aldershot point of view, we love that derby, so do Woking, really, and it looks like it might well be on again after the last 10 days or so.
Yeah, no, I've got stick from the fans, which I probably deserve and stuff like that, but I enjoy it. I think that I'd like to see them obviously stay up. The National League derby at probably Aldershot Woking's probably the best one that I feel is at the level, and yeah, I spoke to Michael Doyle before our game against Woking at Maidenhead, and he seems like a really, really nice guy and someone that I think will do really well. He gives young players an opportunity. He wants to play attacking football, and I think he deserves a shot in the National League with a full pre-season behind him, because I think he's got great ideas and one that hopefully will do well in his career as a manager.
Yeah, I'd support that. I think when it's no coincidence when 3 games won in running, you score a late winner. And 2 of those games have been against Altrincham and Gateshead, so no mean feat at all. That suggests to me an awful lot of work on the training ground and a lot on the you know, mentality side of the game as well. Just finishing off with the league fixtures. Chesterfield got it done. Fylde have shown some excellent form of late, but Dobra, Jones, Grigg and Palmer with the goals there, as Chesterfield just eased away in the last 30, 40 minutes or so, as they've done many, many times. Continued good form from Danny Ormerod, an outrageous goal from him there. He's in really, really good form, but it wasn't enough for Fylde, who still find themselves involved in that relegation battle. And Southend and Dagenham was played out live on TV. That one finished 1-1. Dagenham strongly bossing the first half and probably should have had that one done. But Southend always keep going. Danny Waldron got them back level. And then the game that I was at, Aldershot took on Oldham, and Oldham came with 400 fans, big expectations. Before the Aldershot-Oldham game, I caught up with Nathan Radcliffe of the Oldham Athletic Media Team.
Nathan works for the Oldham Media Team, but he's unashamedly an Oldham fan. Nathan, welcome to the EBB. It's, what, seventh against fifth? Trying to look after our own clubs as best we can and also take advantage of all those other teams in the playoffs being involved in the FA Trophy today.
Yeah, that's it. I guess it's just it's a lot of teams playing around each other, and it's so, such a tight pack that, you know, one or two wins lifts you up. As we've seen with Ultragum, a few losses drops you down. So I think that's it. It's the time of the season, is I think anyone looking at it, mathematical looks, if you can get two or three wins together, then you put yourself in a good position to get to the playoffs. So if you do it the other way, though, you're dropping out. So that's what obviously both teams have got to be, going to be looking out for.
When a team does well and gets up into those playoff positions, it then changes expectations. And I think no more so than a club like Oldham, where a lot of the supporter base is probably very grateful to have pulled round what started as a difficult season. But equally, the minute you're there, you're looking at Barnet, Bromley, can we catch them? Because it's a huge difference if you can, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. You know, I'm a big advocate of saying, you know, trying to get second or third. I think if you do it from a, as I say, a mathematical point of view, it gives you a huge advantage. So a team to get second or third, it helps you out massively. And if you get second or third with a few wins, then it gives you good chances for the playoffs, yeah.
There were a few issues defensively earlier in the season. Would you say they've been resolved under Mickey Mellon? Because there's no doubt in your forward talent.
Yeah, the forward talent's massive, obviously. And I also think, as Mickey said, like, if you can show up defensively, then it gives you a bit of an advantage. But I think at the end of the day, it don't matter whether you win 5-4, 1-0, points to points at the end of the day. And obviously that's what we've got quite a lot of this season.
It's such a difficult league to predict, isn't it? But as we're having this chat before the game, I guess the only thing we'd probably both expect today is goals, right?
Yeah, exactly. 5-1 early in the season leads to perhaps there might be goals. You look at us, though. We score quite a few, you score quite a few. So if things go that way, we could be looking at a 4-3 or something like that either way. But we'll just have to wait and see, won't we?
And of course, we'd shake anybody's hand now just for a guarantee that both clubs will be in the playoffs. But we may very well meet again. You never know, do you?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You know, the playoffs, especially this system with the six teams and the elimination rounds, means that obviously you play a lot of teams if you finish in this sort of bottom four quadrant of it. So we quite easily could be playing yourself, Solihull, Gateshead and all that, who we've already played. So we'll just have to wait and see, won't we?
And all I can do, Nathan, is wish you all the best between today and when we meet again.
Hopefully, yeah, rest of the season, we'll see what happens. Perhaps a trip to Wembley, back down south, we don't know.
And, well, a little bit like Barnet and Altrincham before them in the last few weeks, they were dispatched with Aldershot defying kind of all expectations, really, to get another clean sheet. And I have to say, they dominated. It was a first goal for James Daly. When I ask you about him, Kins, he's a very direct player, someone who's obviously been at Woking before. Despite Lauren Tollard missing a second half penalty, Tyler Frost got it over the line in the end. And that pushed Aldershot Town above Oldham and up into the fifth place. And it left me coming away thinking, my goodness, we really are the real deal. The growth under Tommy Widdrington has been incredible, isn't it? In all areas, mentally, in terms of belief, in terms of nous, in terms of consistency. And it's a really good example, Kins, of what you were mentioning earlier, that when you get a good manager at the helm, good things are possible.
Yeah, I think what he's done really well is something that previous managers have struggled with in the past, is he's got the home crowd on it with him. They've won a lot of games at home, especially in the last couple of weeks. He's won a lot of games at home. And look, if you're a manager of Aldershot Town, and all you need to do is get the East Bank on your side, and you'll get them players, they'll get round the players. And it's one of the best stadiums to play in terms of atmosphere, I think. But yeah, he's made Aldershot very organised, very hard-working, and he's added good players in and around that team. And I think that helps massively when you've got like Stokes and Talad, you just keep scoring. It's what we've sort of missed when I was there, a real number nine goal scorer that will score us lots of goals. But yeah, no, fair play for them to be in the playoffs. I'd love to see them get to Wembley. I know it's something that's never happened. So it'd be amazing, absolutely amazing. And I'd definitely be buying a ticket, or I'd be texting Matt Wigman to leave me one. I'm sure I could get
Well, I'll give you a little update there. You'll have to text probably Bob Green, who's back temporarily, Kins, because Matt Wigman's moving on to Birmingham, and a fair play to him, the Aldershot secretary. Already one of the youngest secretaries in the league, and he's got the gig at St Andrews. Okay, that wraps up the National League action. But there were some exciting ties in the FA Trophy quarterfinals involving a lot of those teams at the high end of the National League. And it, at one point, it looked like it was going to be all the home sides that prevailed. But we'll come to you on this one, Dickie. The tightest of the games saw the away side eventually come out victors in a penalty shootout. Solihull Moors coming away from Kin's old side, Wealdstone, with a penalty win.
Yes, indeed. You know, I suppose it was always on the cards that one of these, or at least one of the games, was going to go down to penalties. And yeah, it came in this one, and Solihull did manage to triumph in the end. Although once it got to the shootout, they were looking quite comfortable until the final kick, when Clark missed his, having been successful with all four of theirs before that one. But yeah, then a miss from Duku for Wealdstone meant that they could only get three out of their five. Solihull had four out of their five, and Solihull go through. In regular time, it had finished one each. Max Kretschmar had put Wealdstone ahead. That was equalised fairly quickly afterwards by Callum Maycock, who is Solihull's representative in that England C squad that you've mentioned. And then, yeah, it stayed level all the way to 90 minutes then, and all the way into a penalty shootout that Moors came through successfully. And yeah, just one game from Wembley now, which would be a nice fillip for them.
Yeah, we'll wait and see the draw. And in terms of the other sides that have progressed, Macclesfield, of course, they played Colville. Both, none of these sides, National League sides, surely only a matter of time before Macclesfield are. How on earth John Rooney's playing at that level, I don't know, but he may well have him up to the National League level very soon. Huge kudos to Peterborough Sports, who had a nightmare start at Gateshead, where Dejon Brown, is that how you say his name? He got a hat-trick in the opening 22 minutes. He looks a real talent. Peterborough Sports making a real fight of it with two goals in a minute shortly after half-time, but ultimately, it wasn't enough. And then the other game, which I want to come to you on, Kins, the battle of the two London clubs, probably, along with Gateshead, the favourites for the FA Trophy this year. Bromley prevailed 2-0. They are the side that have been there in that FA Trophy final twice in the last 10 years. Obviously, beaten Wrexham a couple of years ago. And when you've got players like Michael Cheek and Olamola in your side, you've always got a chance, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. I was with a fella at Wealdstone, and yeah, he's a good player. And you think Barnett could go back to Wembley again, which is amazing for the club. For Barnett, I'm not sure whether they've been there, but it'd be good. And I was disappointed in Wealdstone. I think that would have been lovely for them, especially being just right round the corner from there. Yeah, Max missing a penalty, that's something that he's, I would put my mortgage on Max scoring a penalty. But Barnett Bromley, great contest.
Yeah, in fairness to Kretschmar, it was him that put Wealdstone ahead in that game. But some of the all-time greats of the game have missed penalties. He never missed them when he took them for Woking against Aldershot. But yeah, so the semi-finalists in the FA Trophy are Bromley, Gateshead, Solihull Moors and Macclesfield. And that's probably how they'll line up as favourites too. Let's see what the draw brings in that one. That just leaves me to add my thanks to you, really, Kins, for coming on and joining us. Great to see you. And, you know, you epitomise for me, you know, the highs and lows of football. You've had some amazing times. And you've had some difficult times, but you always show the character to come through them. And I'm really, really delighted for you that off the pitch, things are going so well for your Arsenal. Thanks for joining us.
No, it's been a pleasure. We'll see what happens in the summer. Hopefully I can carry on playing for another 2 seasons. I don't really want to finish on not really playing and being like the way I've played. I'd like to play a lot more games. But like I said previously, I'll be there to support other players. But yeah, I still think I've got a lot to give to the game, and especially outside of football, it's something that I'll probably stay in for the rest of my life.
Just before we move on from the FA Trophy, of course, will culminate in non-league finals day, which will also encompass the FA Vars final. We'll be there for that day as always, and so might one of our recent guests, Dickie.
Yeah, we had Scott Doe, who obviously does some punditry for TNT Sports on after the last round, and his Romford side was successful yesterday, winning 1-0 at North Greenford. So that prospect of Scott actually participating or playing in a game on TNT Sports and therefore being having his performance out there to be critiqued by his TNT Sports colleagues moves one game closer. It'd be a fantastic angle for TNT if that can happen. But first and foremost, for Scott to reach a Wembley final. So, yeah, wait to see who they get in the draw and wish him all the very best with that.
Yeah, good luck, Scotty Doe. And happy birthday, by the way, Scotty Davis, another regular on this podcast. We'll cover the National League South and how his Slough Town side got on in a little while. But the National League North are going to take top honours and go first today, because we always have a bit of a quandary where to start. But something very, very special happened. First and foremost, a 10-goal game, but 7 of them to the away side. Something I've only seen once this season. And that was Boston United, who went to Gloucester City, part of that infamous doubleheader that went on yesterday, Dickie. And it was largely down to the feats of two men.
Yeah, a sensational day if you're a Boston United fan, winning 7-3 at Gloucester. And two hat-tricks in the game. In fact, one player with 4 goals, one player with 3. Kelsey Mooney was the player netting 4, and Jimmy Knowles, the one who got a mere hat-trick, both leaving with a match ball. And I think, based on some stats that I know, I knew that Christian from Boston, who has been a guest on this podcast, would be all over this one. The first time Boston United have had two hat-tricks in a game since 1967. I think he's put a great post on X recently saying that I think the last time that happened for a Boston United team, that Lennon and McCartney were still writing Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. They hadn't even committed it to record at that point. So, yeah, an astonishing achievement for them. They were 3-0 up within 24 minutes. Mooney had completed a hat-trick before the first half had ended. It was 4-2 at that point, already, a ding-dong. Ben Beresford got the next goal of the game, which brought it back to 3-4. And at that point, Gloucester might have been hoping, half an hour left. It's been a dreadful first hour of the game, but they might be able to get back into it. Knowles and Mooney then just took it away from them. Goals in the 71st, 77th. And Knowles actually completing his hat-trick in injury time. So he only just managed to take the match ball away with him, but he did. Fantastic result for Boston and a big boost for them in their aim of getting into the playoffs this season.
Yeah, absolutely. They've lifted up into seventh place with that 7-3 result. It wasn't the only game that took place at Gloucester. We'll focus on the other one when we cover the National League South, but it might be a record for the most amount of goals of ground seen on a given day. More of that to follow. At the top end, Scunthorpe got going nice and early away to Bishop Stortford. They got the job done comfortably. There was a hat-trick in that one as well for Danny Whitehall. But they'll have come off the pitch and been a little bit... They'd have had the winds knocked out of their sails, because they'd have quickly looked to see how Tamworth got on away at Scarborough. And perhaps not so spectacularly, Dickie, but they came away with all 3 points as well. To cement the lead that they've got.
Yes, they did. Scunthorpe did what was required of them yesterday. They got the win. I think it was particularly important for Scunthorpe, given that they had a really dreadful midweek result, one that had cast a lot of their promotion aspirations into doubt. Getting thumped 4-0 at Darlington, who we know that Darlington are desperately in need of the points down at the bottom. A fantastic result for Steve Watson's team. It was a red card for Scunthorpe in that one as well. So they were looking for a reaction. They needed a reaction yesterday. And I suppose if you're looking for a team to get one against the team that is rock bottom of the table and cut adrift, it was really... If Scunthorpe hadn't taken 3 points in this game yesterday, then would have been serious questions asked. But they did what was required of them. But yeah, ultimately, so did Tamworth. A 1-0 win away at Scarborough, not the easiest of places to go. Jordan Cullen and LeBird getting the winning goal in the 55th minute. Yet another Tamworth clean sheet. And it does just seem at the moment that whatever Scunthorpe can do, Tamworth can just do that little bit better. And, you know, the gap at the top of the table remains. I think it's 12 points at the moment. I'm just calling up the table to have a look. It remains 12 points. There's 24 left to play for both of them. They've both played 38 games. So really the margins for error are getting smaller and smaller. And I noted on Tuesday night as well that Scunthorpe, it isn't just a case of perhaps not being in the race to take first place now. Scunthorpe are looking over their shoulders at Chorley, who are just a point behind them and have a game in hand. So it is possible that Scunthorpe might not even claim second place. And that second place could be all important when it comes to the playoffs in terms of, you know, having a home draw all the way through to the final.
Absolutely. Yes, a good point that you make there. I often think there's no difference between second and third, but there is, because if both those sides prevail from there, actually, no, there isn't. I'm going to retract that. There isn't. They both have a home semi-final to get to the final. So actually, Dickie, we've countered our own argument here, and it doesn't really matter whether you finish second or third. However, let's recognise what Chorley did. Chorley did what Tamworth did and what Brackley just below them did. There was a bit of a theme yesterday, the 1-0 away win. It happened five times in the National League North. Chorley got it done 1-0 at Hereford. Brackley had to wait a little bit longer, 10 minutes from time, for their one goal win at South Shields. But an impressive win that was, no doubt.
Yeah, it was. It was Jack Hazlehurst who got the Chorley goal. Mentioned him plenty of times on this podcast this season for scoring important goals for the Magpies. It was Morgan Roberts who got the Brackley goal with just 10 minutes left on the clock, as you noted, away to South Shields. Neither of them particularly easy places to go. Chorley winning at Hereford. They've got their own hopes still of getting into the playoffs. And although I think South Shields are probably just a little bit too far adrift to think of that, it isn't an easy place to go and get the points. So kudos to Brackley Town and to Chorley for getting out done. I think there's possibly the benefit of just having, you know, some experienced campaigners in those sides who know what it takes at this point of the season to go away from home, grind out some points and keep your ambitions on track.
Absolutely. Chester are in fifth. They drew 0-0 with Curzon Ashton, but it was 1-1 in terms of points and 1-1 in terms of red cards too. Kieran Burton sent off for two yellows, and also James Spencer, a man who skirts with the edge of the laws of the game on a regular basis, Dickie.
He can do, yes. I suppose this one... There's a little bit of, there's players on both sides who've played for the opposite in this case. And Curzon manager Craig Marner is a Chester favourite for many years. So I don't think this was ever a given for Chester that this was 3 points, that they were on offer, that they just simply had to turn up and collect. We know you don't get that with the Curzon Ashton side, particularly one whose manager would be pretty motivated to get something against his old team yesterday. Not that there's any bad blood there, but, you know, just going back and show your old side that you're still doing okay. The red cards for Burton and Spencer won't be helping the ambitions of either of those teams later on as we head further into the season. They were both for second yellows, so I don't think we're talking about three-game suspensions or anything like that. But, you just don't want key personnel missing at this time of the season, do you?
Absolutely not. Alfreton Town occupied the final, or rather the sixth position and a playoff position. They had a little bit of work to do. They were always ahead, though, against Farsley Celtic. 3-2 win in the end, one of the highest scoring games of the day, Dickie.
Yeah, it was. I dare say I'm probably going to attract some criticism for saying this probably wasn't a game for the purists, but it would have been a very, very well contested game, I would think, between these two sides who know the division really well and know what it takes to get points here. Jake Day got Alfreton on the board, 23 minutes. Liam Walduck, he's been a really outstanding signing for Alfreton this season. He had them 2-0 up after 28. Ben Atkinson replied with a penalty in the third minute of first half injury time. Adam Lund scored again for Alfreton to restore the two-goal advantage. But then Ben Atkinson's brother, Chris Atkinson, I think he may be Farsley's record appearance maker. I think he went over the 300 mark for them recently. He got a second goal for his team in the 62nd minute, and there's still half an hour to play. You're thinking there might be more to come, but no, it stayed as 3-2 for Alfreton. Big win for Billy Heath's team. That they're still in contention for playoff place too.
Yeah, we mentioned Boston were seventh. They're on 59 points. There are five sides within 4 points of them, so still a very competitive playoff race in the National League North. The next teams are the aforementioned Curzon and Hereford, who just picked up 1 point between them. Then come Warrington, Scarborough and Spennymoor. And perhaps you can fill me in, if you know the reason, as to why Warrington didn't have a game on Saturday, Dick.
I would imagine, let me try and think. I don't know why Warrington didn't play. Oh, it would probably be because of the involvement of Peterborough Sports in the FA
of course,
Trophy.
Yeah.
That would be why there was no game for Warrington yesterday. So, yeah, that will be a midweek rearrangement. We, of course, you know, when teams do progress in the trophy, we think in terms of them having a fixture backlog, but of course it can have a knock-on effect for the teams they're going to play as well. So, yeah, nothing there for them. Spennymoor, they've been in slightly improved form of late, and they would have been thrilled with this one yesterday. There's no love lost between Spennymoor and Darlington, County Durham rivals. This one kicked off at 1 o'clock, I assume, to reduce the opportunity for the fans of County Durham to spend a bit too long in the pub. There has been a little bit of trouble at this game in the past. Darlington led in that one. Matty Cornish, he's been finding the onion bag for Steve Watson's side lately as well. Of course, they're looking to build on that 4-0 win they had in midweek. But the replies from Will Harris and Rob Ramshaw, two goals within 6 minutes. All the scoring done by half-time. Spennymoor winning that one by 2-1.
Turning our attentions to the bottom end of the National League North then. Bishop Stortford and Gloucester, we've already said they're the bottom two sides. Heavy home defeats for both of them. Banbury, well, they took on a side a few points clear of the playoff positions, but they came out with no goals and no points thanks to Marcus Carver's goal on the hour mark. And in terms of the other team in the bottom four, Darlington, who, as you say, Dickie, improved form of late, but a bit like your Kidderminsters and your Fylkes and your Boreham Woods in the National League, you can have a good run of games, but if it's followed by a couple of defeats, you can find yourselves right back in there again.
Yes, you can. Yeah, that consistency is key, isn't it, to staying away from danger at the bottom. Buxton winning that one quite comfortably. Diego Di Girolamo scoring twice in that one. Dylan Motley Henry also recording a goal for them. And yeah, I think Rushall knew, not that it was necessarily going to be a relegation battle, but they knew they'd find it tough in this division this season based on their resources. Just sort of casting my eye at the bottom of the table, I'm just going to come back and touch on Gloucester again, because I know Mike Cook, the manager, after that 7-3 defeat, I don't know whether this is prompted or this is to get a reaction out of his team, but he said that the performance yesterday didn't just embarrass the club, that the players had embarrassed themselves. And I guess it's a tricky line to walk, isn't it? You know, you need those players to perform for you. But, you know, if you feel that a criticism like that is going to get a performance out of them, then, you know, maybe that's, well, that's the route he's certainly choosing to go down. So it'd be interesting to see how they do. Banbury, that was a sixth defeat in a row for them. So their form isn't looking great at a crucial time of the season either. So I think we're starting to see who might be filling some of those four spots at the bottom of the National League North now.
Absolutely. There's one game remaining, and it was a key game and a crucial result. Kings Lynn will have travelled up the East Coast to Blyth Spartans, for whom they've dragged right back into the relegation scrap, because Kings Lynn got it done with another one of those 1-0 away wins. And Blyth Spartans, Dickie, started the season so well, but they've gradually been sliding down the table, and now they are level on points, 43, with Kings Lynn just 3 points above the relegation zone.
Yeah, and just when you have a look at Blyth's form, Blyth had a terrific end to 2023 and a start of 2024. I'm just looking here, they had 4 wins out of 6 in a 6-match unbeaten run, which ended with a 1-0 win away at Gloucester on the 20th of January. They haven't won since, and there's only a couple of draws in there. So I don't think this is necessarily to do with John Shaw's arrival as manager. I think this is quite a consistent pattern with Blyth in that they do start the season well, but whether sort of like the grind of that long distance travelling they have eventually sort of like starts to wear away at them. But yeah, that's a big result for Kings Lynn yesterday. It's not been an easy task for Adam Lakeland going in there to try and get things moving in the right direction. But they are unbeaten in 7, 4 wins in those 7. You would have to say that it does look as if he's getting them going in the right direction now. There's only, well, say for 2-3 defeats in January, it's been a really, really good run of form for Kings Lynn lately. So it does look as if they've turned the corner. Of course, a player that they brought in and invested quite heavily in, Johnny Margetts, he got their winning goal yesterday from the penalty spot. I think Kings Lynn are looking safely at another season in National North now.
Yeah, a little way to go still for Kings Lynn, but they've certainly pulled things around nicely over the last couple of months. Finally, we're going to take a look at the National League South. So no Joe Pope this week, and we always appreciate his insight on the National League South. But Dickie and I are going to battle away anyway, as we are based in the Midlands, as I am, and pretty much you are across the other side, Dickie.
This is where Joe gets to find out whether we've been paying attention in previous weeks.
Do you know what? I'm going to be honest. A couple of years ago, I did feel a bit uncomfortable with this, but we've followed it so closely for so long now, and benefited, of course, from the insight of Joe and occasionally Tom Lang and one or two of the others. And we've also occasionally benefited from the insight of some of those lads like Ben at Chelmsford and Tom's colleagues at Hampton and Richmond. But what will have stood out like a sore thumb to us yesterday, Dickie, is a very, very rare home defeat for Yeovil and a massive 3 points for a 1-0 win for Welling United, who pulled 3 points clear of the relegation zone.
Yes, this certainly wasn't a result that I imagine many people would have had down on their National League South bingo card or on their accumulators. But yeah, a very, very valuable 3 points for Welling yesterday, secured by Anthony Grant. He's a midfielder who's been around for an awful long time. He's played in the EFL. I know he was at my local side, Shrewsbury Town, a little while back. He scored in the 72nd minute of that game. And yeah, handed the Glovers a rare defeat anywhere, but a rare defeat on their own turf, certainly. But it is a big, big result for Welling, that one.
I'm just going to ask you here, was that a deliberate Freudian slip, handed Glovers?
No, I had it in mind. I did think hands and Glovers possibly went quite well together there. But yes, well spotted, Rob. You've been paying attention as well.
The title race looks to be over. It's not mathematically done and dusted. And one side that will have come into their dressing room yesterday, euphorious because of their own performance and result, And also by seeing that Yeovil had lost his Chelmsford, who were pushing hardest to catch them. A couple of penalties there for them as they saw off Truro by 4-1. And I guess the biggest point of note from that game, Dickie, is where the game was played.
Yeah, it was. We spoke about the fact that there were 10 goals at the Tiger Turf Stadium in that game between Gloucester and Boston earlier. There were a further 5 in the evening because this game also took place at the Tiger Turf Stadium. Truro made an arrangement to play there. Obviously, they're facing a fixture backlog and they're rather bizarre sharing arrangement with Taunton, who don't seem to be able to get their own games on, let alone anybody else's. Chelmsford, it would have been a late Saturday night for the Clarets, but a party bus on the way back home. As you say, Alexander topping and tailing, a 4-1 win for them with 2 goals from the penalty spot in the third and the 55th minute. There was a goal in that one as well for Cameron James, and the superbly named Alpha Odysseus scoring in the 42nd minute. The reply from Truro came in the 18th minute from Tyler Harvey. Not enough for them at all. It did pull them back to 1-1 at that point, but yeah, Chelmsford stretched away from them on the artificial turf at the Tiger Turf.
I wonder if Gloucester had been so bold yesterday, so to say, come and watch both games. We'll just charge £1 a goal. Queue up and pay on your way out. They'd have still got. They'd have got 15 quid ahead, wouldn't they, for that?
Yeah, I mean, if you paid per goal from the games that you watched, then clearly, if you were a Gloucester fan or a Truro fan, you will have been disappointed to stump up your money for that one yesterday. But yeah, goals galore in those two games.
Yeah, I mean, for Truro, the gamble to play at Gloucester certainly worked out last time, but not this time. They do remain a point outside the relegation zone. Just turning our attentions to the top end, Yeovil weren't the only top side that succumbed to a home defeat on Saturday. And the other one really caught the eye as well, didn't it, Dickie? Worthing at home to Taunton. You'd have absolutely banked on that one being a home win, but it wasn't.
Yeah, Worthing, of course, are in the post-Adam Hinchelwood era. So I guess, you know, that introduces a little factor into this game that perhaps I still think most people would have thought this would be a home win for Worthing. But yeah, congratulations to Taunton on securing a very valuable and what sounds like a very impressive 3-1 win. Seb Bolton, I think he's just joined them recently from Weymouth. He was on target in the 19th minute. There were goals then in the second half from Grimes and Jarvis. Worthing fans, if they were disappointed and had left early, they missed the only highlight for them, which was a goal late on in the game from Jack Wadham. A most unexpected result. If Taunton can't get it done on their own pitch, I guess they are going to have to try and go away from home and get it done on others. And they did that yesterday.
Hampton and Richmond are next in the table and they kept up a nice little habit for late goals at home. A 90+6 winner from Gibson Hammond that keeps them riding high in the playoff race. And then comes one of the form sides in the National League South, Braintree. And I saw a post from Scotty Davis, the Slough Town manager, saying undoubtedly it was going to be a really, really tough test for his Slough Town side going to one of the form sides in the National League South, Braintree Town. But Slough got out of there with a point. A Cook Apaya equaliser in the 73rd minute after Blair had put Braintree ahead. So a point on his birthday went for Scotty Davis, who's just liked my post wishing him happy birthday exactly at the very point that I'm talking about Slough Town. Elsewhere in the top five, St Albans are sixth now, Dickie, and that is thanks to a terrific 2-1 away win at St Albans that I dare say from afar might have been affected by the first half sending off of a player that was on this podcast just a few weeks ago.
You suspect that it was. St Albans did have the lead by that point. The prolific Sean Jeffers had got them on the mark after 15 minutes. George Fowler, it was, who is our recent guest, obviously as part of Maidstone's FA Cup run. He was dismissed for what looks like a straight red card in the 42nd minute. There was then a goal from Giorgio Rasulo, a player I saw last season when he was at Banbury. He's at St Albans now. He added a second in the 58th minute. Maidstone did manage to get back onto the board or get something, give their fans something to cheer with a goal from Matt Rush in the 76th minute. But yeah, it feels a little bit like, I guess you've always got this, that there's feeling of a little bit of after the Lord Mayor's show with Maidstone. If they're having been, you know, the centre of attention and their FA Cup run has been absolutely fantastic and has generated fantastic interest and fantastic income for the club. But yeah, when you've got to go back to the grind of that, and when you know that Grandstand or Football Focus aren't coming to interview you, you know, I suppose, you know, there is a little bit of a flat feeling about it. And if there was that yesterday, it certainly looks as if St Albans took advantage of it.
Do you know what? We talked about those 5-1-0 away wins in the National League North. If there was a pattern in the South, it was a lot of home bankers not coming off. Two more of them, Bath in seventh place, went down 2-0 at home to Farnborough. Prouty and Lewis on the score sheet for Borough. And then Avely, who've been so good and so consistent all season, just outside of the playoffs, they also came up with a nil at home. Malachi Linton, of course, last seen at Yeovil, I think, with a double there in the second half to get the job done for Weymouth, who are in a very healthy position this year, certainly compared to last, firmly in mid-table. Another side that made a management change recently, or two sides actually, Eastbourne and Hemel Hempstead. And it was Bamba, not Kabamba, but Bamba, Yaha, Bamba, I wish I hadn't started that, who put Eastbourne ahead in the first half. And before half-time, Kombe Kawimbi got sent off. Terrific names this week, Dickie. He got sent off for two yellows in the first half, and ultimately Eastbourne Borough came out with all 3 points there, and they'll be pretty handy because they really do need to hang on to the shirt tails of the teams above them because they're still embroiled in that relegation scrap.
Yes, they will. I know you mentioned the managerial changes there. Brad Quinton moved aside at Hemel Hempstead in midweek. And obviously not any immediate reaction to that from his players. I won't be helped by that dismissal, of course, away from home. Probably feels like a bit of a week in the Hemel Hempstead dressing room where, you know, things aren't going for you. But yeah, a very important 3 points for Eastbourne.
Absolutely. There was a Desmond, as I call him, a 2-2 between Havant and Waterlooville and Tunbridge. Most of the goals coming in the first half, but ultimately a Dabra equaliser in the 50th minute secured that point for Tunbridge Angels. They, of course, are also in a healthy mid-table position. But Dover, who are stuck down the bottom, are not far off mathematically down now, are they, Dickie? They're 17 points off safety. And on Saturday, they lost 1-0 away at Western Supermare, for whom, you know, that was a great 3 points. And they're, to be honest, nearer the playoffs, 10 points behind them than they are the relegation positions, which they're 11 clear of.
Yeah, came late on as well, a goal from James Dodd in the 85th minute. So, a bit of a heartbreaker for Dover. You know, you think you're potentially taking a point all that way back home from one coast to the other. But yeah, Western Supermare getting the job done late in the game. I know that I've seen some quotes or some press coverage recently of Dover's plight from Chairman Jim Parmenter. We know that a lot of what's gone on at Dover goes back to, I guess, can be linked back to what happened when they're in their National League days and what happened during lockdown, and Jim Parmenter not wanting to play games, or apparently not wanting to play games. That was our understanding of it when, you know, the league was kind of instructed to carry on. He didn't want to, felt he was putting the club's financial future at risk by doing so. I suppose he might point to that and say, well, look, I was right. But yeah, it's a pretty sorry last few seasons for Dover fans. And we just, you know, just for their sake, you hope that there's a halt to the downward slide at some point and they start to enjoy some better days and start to enjoy their football a bit more.
Just one game left, and you see, he might not be on the pod this week, but I've ensured that Joe Pope will listen to every minute of this podcast, because when he does so, he'll still be waiting for mention of Torquay United, who, of course, are in mid-table these days and a little bit adrift of those playoff spots. But they got the job done 4-1 against Dartford on Saturday. A Jarvis penalty, Jude Boyd, Bradley Ash and Afori Achimpong in the 88th minute, with just a reply from McCanby for Dartford. And Torquay United, it felt like a breath of fresh air around the place yesterday. We might not have Joe, but we got a quote from his dad, Garrett. And in his words, he said, "Torquay are slowly learning how not to play the way Gary Johnson wanted them to." That's a little bit harsh, I'm sure, but a little bit tongue-in-cheek from us, of course. But well done to Torquay. And, well, as for Dartford, another side that made a managerial change recently, they find themselves feeling rather uncomfortable, looking over their shoulders, just a point clear of the relegation zone in the National League South. All right, that's just about it for this week. We're going to take a brief look ahead to see what happened in midweek. So in the National League South, there's a game on Monday between Aveley and Tunbridge. And Dickie, what have we got coming up midweek? Any National League North action?
Yes, there is. There is a full programme of National League North action on Tuesday evening. All 12 teams in action. Just having a look down the fixtures there, there's a another northeast ding-dong there between Blyth and Darlington. Obviously, we know we said earlier that Blyth not being in great form. Darlington still needing the points towards the bottom of the table. If Gloucester were looking to rebound from that 7-3 defeat yesterday, they have not got the easiest of tasks. They are at home, but they've got league leaders Tamworth visiting there. So that's a tricky task for them. Just looking to see where Scunthorpe are. They are away at Spennymoor. So again, not too much distance there. Chorley, they're in third place. They're away to South Shields. Brackley Town are at Rushall Olympic. So again, based on current form, you would kind of imagine that those teams that are in the playoff places are going to continue to hold those playoff places. But yeah, looking up and down the fixtures there, I'll keep a keen eye on that Gloucester Tamworth one just to see what happens there, just to see principally Tamworth can be taking another step towards the title there, I feel.
Yeah, almost a full set in the National League South this midweek as well. A couple of games I'm going to pick out from that. A bottom four scrap between Eastbourne, Borough and Dover. And if Maidstone United want to get back on the horse, as they say, they're going to have to do so against Chelmsford, who are flying. And in the National League itself, there's also a full set of fixtures. I'll be at Aldershot Town against Ebbsfleet. Ebbsfleet, of course, still unbeaten under Danny Searle and Anwar Udin, and fresh after no game at the weekend. Altrincham at one end of the table will take on York City. Barnet at home to Eastleigh. Chesterfield top at home to Oxford City, who are bottom. FC Halifax Town will have a real chance to pull themselves right into those playoffs because they will play at home to Oldham Athletic. Gateshead against Dagenham and Redbridge. Kidderminster against Fylde. Doesn't that one stand out again as well? Maidenhead United at home to Hartlepool. Rochdale, Woking. Solihull Moors against Boreham Wood, another match involving the battle at both ends. And then Southend United, who are up to 10th. It's ridiculous, isn't it? At home to Dorking Wanderers, who've got to get the points wherever they can now if they're going to pull themselves to safety. And then finally, an all-London or inside the M25 battle between Wealdstone and Bromley. Thanks very much to our guests this week, to Mick Payne for talking about England C, to Nathan for coming on a difficult day for Oldham, to our earlier guest Lewis Kinsella, and of course to your good self, Dickie Wharton.
Oh, it's really kind, Rob. Yes, don't mind taking last billing to any of those gentlemen. Always a pleasure to be involved.
Great stuff. Have a good footballing week, listeners. Thanks for joining us again. Thanks to our producer, Luke Edwards. And play the theme tune, Luke.